Mazzara and Parra project to Amimora. Herrera, Cabrera, don't let the Bay that scare ya. Machado or Bono or Nolan Garantano.
Teach you how to win Rondo. Start, sit, and drop, and all you need to know. Outlaws, Rick Porcello. Now let's get on with the show.
Okay, the third mock draft of our offseason, but the first one that we're doing on the air. Pretty cool. Welcome, everybody, to Fantasy Baseball Today. I'm Adam Azer with Scott White, Heath Cummings, and Chris Towers. And what, we have a 10-team draft? What?
Azer, would you just pick already? You're on
oh,
the clock.
Oh, sorry.
Make your pick.
You betcha I will.
Terrible. That's terrible.
Second, oh, come on. Second pick. Trout goes one, Betts goes two. Okay, Scott, you put together this draft pretty short notice. We don't usually do 10-team drafts.
No, we don't, but I figured it'd be nice and breezy for the podcast, head-to-head points format, so we can really get into the nitty-gritty of how positions break down,
cool.
how they relate to each other, and it'd be good.
I think 10-team leagues are relatively popular.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're common.
Much more common than in our leagues.
Well, there it is. The last time we did a points league draft, Clayton Kershaw went one. This time he went three. So it's Trout, Betts, to me, Kershaw, and then Jose Altuve with your first four picks. So, yeah, again, this is points. 1 point for a single, two for a double, three for a triple, four for a home run, one for a run, one for an RBI, and you do, as a hitter, gain a point for a walk and lose a half a point for a strikeout. So it's a different format. You don't have to have steals. You don't have to have a particular category. You just select the best player. And now that the big three hitters are off the board, Trout, Betts, and Altuve, plus one pitcher, Kershaw, who went third, Heath Cummings is on the clock with the fifth pick, and he took... Heath?
Josh Donaldson.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I think this is the first mock draft we've done where the best third baseman actually was the first third baseman taken.
Yeah, Chris Bryant went first, or actually second at third base. Nolan Arenado went first last time.
Yeah, and I think there's a debate between those three who's actually the best. I think Donaldson's helped by this format because you don't necessarily need him hitting for average, which you do more so in Roto.
Something we are going to have to keep in mind, and I think it's going to be a healthy topic of discussion as we move forward in the offseason, is the probably much diminished Toronto Blue Jays lineup around him.
The thing is, if nobody will give anybody that they weren't going to re-sign a big contract, they may all come back.
Maybe. It's entirely possible.
So, like, you add Big Ken to the mix.
Big Ken.
Yeah, the lineup definitely got worse, but there's a chance that they could relegate Kendrys Morales to a bench role, and then it'll be okay.
So,
all right, I'm up.
Wait, hold on. Let's recap here. So Trout, Betts, Kershaw, Altuve, and then the third baseman run. Donaldson, Bryant, Arenado to Heath,
yeah.
Lance, and Scott.
Yeah, and that's kind of what we were saying earlier, how hard it is to distinguish between the three. I mean, they go consecutively here. I would have been fine with any one of them. I think maybe if Bryant was the last one there when I picked the third of the three, I might have taken Paul Goldschmidt over him in this format, in this format especially, since Goldschmidt's a better plate discipline player. And that's who Chris took, eighth overall.
Yeah.
But I don't know that you can go wrong with any of the third basemen.
Scott, who's in the draft today?
So you mentioned Lance Brozdowski. He writes for big3sports.com. He's helping us out this time. Phil Panebschik of Patton and Company. He's helping us out with this one. We also got a Twitter follower, a podcast listener just like you, Joel Nichols.
Cool.
Hey, Joel.
In this draft, he actually had the first overall pick, took Mike Trout with it. That's the right way to go. So far, so good. Exactly.
The process of picking the Twitter follower to be in this draft was very entertaining. Because Scott makes these mistakes where he kind of like out loud says something at his desk that he doesn't actually want Chris and I's help with. But whenever he brings it up, like as a point of conversation, Chris and I start offering our input.
Can you imagine a world in which Heath and I are opinionated, even when nobody asked for it?
Yeah. This happened. This has happened a couple times already in the preseason. It's going to happen a lot moving forward.
Well, to circle back to the draft, Bryce Harper just went 9th, and then Anthony Rizzo went 10th, and I was about to say, can you really take Bryce Harper over Anthony Rizzo? And because that's not the way it went in the head-to-head points league draft we did a few weeks ago before free agency and all that. Now, the drop off at outfield is pretty harsh. It's just not, I mean, I don't know. Like, you could still get Votto, you could still get Encarnacion if you want in the second round as the guy who took Harper over Rizzo. The best outfielder available might be like, I don't know, what, Charlie Blackmon, Trey Turner's outfield eligible, right?
Right. I mean, those are still really good. I don't think the drop off comes until well after Harper.
Well, and who knows if there's actually a drop off after Harper, right? Like, this is another thing that we're going to have to debate throughout the season. But if Bryce Harper's 2016 Bryce Harper, I'm not sure he's worthy of a first round pick.
No, exactly. And that's why, look, I totally understand somebody taking Harper over Rizzo. Harper was our first overall pick last year, so it makes sense.
Not mine.
But I think the main thing with my first round pick, with my second round pick, with my early round picks, that the main thing I want to do is not screw it up. And I think Rizzo is the ultimate don't screw it up pick. There are no concerns with him, supporting cast, consistency. Doesn't have quite the upside of Harper, but he's not going to be the reason you lose if you lose.
Yeah, well, and then Machado went to Phil, who took Rizzo, Machado, 10-11.
That's a great start.
And then Max Scherzer, 12. That gives us the exact same first 12 as the last head-to-head mock draft.
Ah.
Different order, though. Just
very different order, but yeah.
Yeah. No, and the first time we did it was Kershaw, 1, Trout, 2, Scherzer, 3. This time we get Trout, Betts, Kershaw, and then we get Scherzer, 12th overall, second pick of the second round. So RJ starts his team with Bryce Harper and Max Scherzer. I think I've talked about this a lot. The one thing I've learned is that first base is not so deep, but this is a 10-team league, so there's not that much position scarcity. And Ian Desmond, can I expect him to get first base eligibility by week 2 or week 3 at the latest of the fantasy season?
Provided Charlie Blackmon isn't traded.
Yeah.
Yeah, which, provided the plan holds.
Which I will say, something that I'm realizing here, and I think it's even more relevant for a 12-team league, is that 13th pick is not a great place to be.
Well, you took Blackmon.
Yeah, and you know, the last time we did this draft, it was Carlos Correa. Blackmon, if he stays in Colorado, I obviously feel pretty great about it. I don't know how good I feel about Carlos Correa.
We've also seen Seager go there, too.
And it's just it's not a great place to be picking, I think. It feels like there is a pretty clear drop-off after the Rizzo, Harper, Machado.
Well, if you hadn't taken Goldschmidt, which I think Goldschmidt was easily the top choice there, but if you hadn't taken Goldschmidt, then you just take Votto there, right?
If I hadn't taken Goldschmidt at 8, sure.
Hold on, well, Scott's on the clock, and I think I know who he's going to go with, and I think it's who I would... No, not who
And it's funny, because there's so many different things being discussed there. Heath talked about, you'd go Votto, right? Well, I don't even think Votto's the next first baseman. I think Miguel Cabrera, who I took, is. And what's interesting is, in my top 300, I have Corey Seager, I think 11th, 12th overall, ahead of Miguel Cabrera, but he's still out there. Carlos Correa is still out there. It's a 10-team league as opposed to a 12-team league, which is what I constructed my top 300 for. And so that changes position scarcity in a way that I think makes first base scarcer and shortstop maybe not quite as scarce. So throwing positions out of the window, Miguel Cabrera is a much more productive fantasy player than what I would expect from Seager. So I'll go ahead and go with him and hope there's still a good shortstop for me in round 3 or 4.
Was Cabrera better than Seager last year?
Yes. In terms of points per game, Cabrera was 3.52 and Seager was 3.14, which is really not even close.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually thought you were going to go with Trey Turner, and I'm thinking I'm probably going to take him next. Bumgarner just went. So it went Cabrera, then Joey Votto, Corey Seager to Heath, Madison Bumgarner to George. That means I'm on deck. ooh, so this is tough because I kind of want Trey Turner because he's going to be shortstop eligible pretty quickly. And
you know who's already shortstop eligible?
He is?
No, you know who is.
Oh, who?
Carlos Correa.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I forgot about him. He's actually the guy. I was the one who took him 13th. So we're dealing with a draft queue, a draft room that hasn't been updated yet. So it's still requires some searching. Let me recap round two. Manny Machado, Max Scherzer, Charlie Blackmon, Miguel Cabrera, Joey Votto, Corey Seager, and Madison Bumgarner. Oh, I'm still on deck. Correa, Encarnacion, and Turner. I took Mookie Betts with my first pick, guys.
Okay.
I don't want to be bad at first base. But what would you guys do here?
I mean, it's thinning out pretty quickly here. It's probably the top heaviest position. I guess third base is comparable, but third base I think has a lot more second tier contributors than first base does. So if you want a good first baseman, I think need to do it kind of this round or next.
In a 10-team league though, Adam?
Yeah.
Like that's what I was, if Votto had been there, I was taking him. If Miggy had been there, I was taking him. But in a 10-team league, are you going to get a bad first baseman?
Well, who's 10th in your rankings? 10th in your rankings is, yeah, I mean, it could be Jose Abreu, could be Will Myers, could be Chris Davis.
I mean, it depends on, like, Jose Abreu in this broad sense isn't a bad first baseman. But, you know, in terms of head-to-head points per game, his production last year was comparable to...
He's not worthy of the 20th overall pick, and I took Carlos Correa at 19th overall.
He's not, and I think in a 10-team league, specifically a 10-team points league, you're not going to he's going to be noticeably worse than what your competition has at first base.
Right, yeah. So you go for elite players as much as you can, and I really like Correa to pick up where he left off in the second half and I guess bounce back.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, we are dealing with something in the draft room right now. We are just about done with round number two. And Cano was picked before me, but we're deciding if that was a real pick or not. So, yeah. Just transparency here on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast.
Yeah, really went downhill in a hurry. We need to just argue about something. Chris, say something ridiculous.
Billy Joel is better than Elton John.
Okay, that wasn't baseball related. I'm sorry, Adam.
What?
Really threw things off there.
Okay. All right, we're back on track.
Okay, so Trey Turner was picked. Instead of Cano, it's Trey Turner. Is that right, Scott?
That's correct, yes.
And then Carlos Correa, and then Xander Bogaerts, 20th overall. Thoughts?
So we're getting a little bit of a shortstop run here, mm-hmm. because not only have Seager and Carlos Correa gone in the last five picks, Trey Turner, who will be a shortstop shortly, in addition to outfield and second base, and Xander Bogaerts. Four of the last five picks were shortstops.
And now it's me again. Hooray. All right, Corey Kluber goes. So this spot in a 12-team league, if I already have two hitters with my first two picks, I'm almost certainly going with a starting pitcher. And I might, but we could also go with a Daniel Murphy. I don't know that I want to fill up middle infield again. Oh, we still have Encarnacion on the board, don't we?
Yep, yes. Wherever he's going to play.
If he were a Blue Jay, this would be such an easy call.
He could be a Rocky, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hey, how crazy would it be for me to take Matt Carpenter over Edwin Encarnacion?
He is the guy that I've had my eye on.
It would be crazy.
Oh. It would be?
It would be very crazy.
Why?
Edwin Encarnacion, come on.
They went five spots apart from each other last time. Let's not act like it's it's a crime against humanity.
I know, but Edwin Encarnacion is...
Is 36. Is
as good as any hitter the last 5 years.
He's only 33. Actually.
Especially in this format. because he strikes out so little for a power.
But isn't Carpenter better in this format too?
Yeah, but...
Oh, it's Carpenter's best format for sure.
It's both of their best format.
It just... The only way I see Encarnacion reasonably being worse than Carpenter is if he doesn't re-sign with Toronto and doesn't go to Colorado.
Fine. I'll take Edwin Encarnacion.
Could end up in Boston.
True. That'd be okay, too.
Last year, I took Carpenter pretty early, and why are you taking Carpenter there? And then it ended up being a great pick. So
for half a season.
Yeah, it was pretty terrible in the second.
No, he got hurt. I mean, he got hurt and
okay.
It was oblique, right?
It was an oblique, yes.
Yeah,
and it was widely blamed for his struggles in the second half, but it doesn't change what actually happened.
No, but the same argument I made for Mike Trout, he got hurt and had a horrible month. I'm the best. So after
comparison at all.
You don't get my comparison?
I mean, Carpenter's miserable second half wrecked his season line. He ended up not rating nearly as high as Encarnacion. When Mike Trout, he had a bad August one year and was still arguably the best player in fantasy. I don't think it's
not if you listen to all the people who were taking Harper number one. Fine. Then how about Jason Kipnis? Jason Kipnis had the oblique injury, I think, 2 years ago. It derailed his season. He bounced back pretty well.
But we're having a different discussion.
Well, yeah, I don't think anybody's actually worried about Matt Carpenter suffering long-term drawbacks from an oblique injury.
No.
Well, no, but I don't think it's 100% certain that that was the cause of his struggle.
Of course it was. This guy's been great every year.
It's a reasonable hypothesis.
I think it pretty clearly was.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not exactly young himself.
Well, and he's not exactly consistent. We've seen kind of three different versions of Matt Carpenter. And they've all been really good, but it's kind of he's a weird player in as much as he's been consistently productive in different ways.
And it's like last year he was 271, 380, 505. The year before he was 272, 365, 505. Well, so I don't think it wrecked his season line.
Yeah, he was having an even better year before that, though, you know?
It definitely changed the way his season was perceived, though. I mean, he probably would have been a second or third round pick if he had maintained that pace. And now, you know, he's probably going to go fifth round.
Oh, you think he's going to fall that far?
God, no.
I think he's a third round pick again.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I think he's been a productive hitter, Matt Carpenter, and I think it's pretty obvious what the problem was.
I think the one thing we can take away from this is only one of us has a third round pick remaining, so it might come down to me.
Yeah,
Scott's on the clock, right?
Hey, he's not taking Matt Carpenter.
Take him, Scott.
Not taking Matt Carpenter.
That would be so weak if he took Matt Carpenter.
It's his least favorite player in baseball.
I am taking Daniel Murphy.
Hold on, let me recap. Round three.
The boring Matt Carpenter.
Kluber, Encarnacion, Stanton. 23rd overall. Lindor, so another shortstop. Chris Sale to Heath. George Springer, Daniel Murphy to Scott. Chris is on the clock.
Can I just say I hate when this happens, when I'm forced to argue with somebody who's taking an extreme stance. Matt Carpenter is 100% fine. That's an extreme stance.
False.
So just to...
How is that an extreme stance?
Matt Carpenter is 100%.
Because you don't know that he's
fine.
No, how could you possibly know he's 100% fine?
Like anyone in baseball, how could you possibly know?
Scott, I didn't take you
well,
for a nihilist.
Somebody who suffered for half a season, a slump that has lasted half the season.
Sure, but there was also
was possibly injury related.
I think he'll be fine, but
risk. You have to acknowledge the risk there. It's an extreme stance not to acknowledge the risk.
I agree. There is risk there. On the other hand, season-long numbers, and Heath's going to roll his eyes and laugh at me when I say it, but season-long numbers tend to be more predictive than any small slice of a season. Now, there are extenuating circumstances involved when players suffer injuries that can kind of throw things off, but I would say, you know what, Matt Carpenter hit 271 last season with an 885 OPS, almost a 1-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio, 21 homers in 129 games. I look at that, and that looks an awful lot like the Matt Carpenter we saw in 2015. He's not 100% guaranteed to be great, but I feel pretty good about it. I'm not expecting him to be the guy he was in the first half of last season either.
Now, you took Matt Carpenter just now, third to last pick of round three.
Yes.
Did you take him in part because you were worried about getting left out at first base, which I bring up because Matt Carpenter is also, of course, eligible at third base and second base. Robinson Cano, Brian Dozier are two second basemen I have ranked ahead of Matt Carpenter, who is still on the board. And yeah, I'd rather
Cano's
have
been, or yeah, Cano is there.
Yeah, Cano is still available.
I honestly kind of just think Matt Carpenter's likely to be better than them.
Okay.
In a so points
you,
league.
So at second base, do you think you'd rank Carpenter ahead of those two in a points league, ahead of Dozier and Cano?
Dozier's tough because he was so good in a way that he's never been before. But I would imagine I would. I haven't gotten to my head-to-head rankings yet, but that sounds like something I would do.
I've got it Dozier, Carpenter, Cano in a points league.
Now that's interesting because I actually have Cano the highest of the three. and that gets back to safety versus risk. And, well, safety versus upside, I guess. I do think in this particular format, Dozier and maybe even Carpenter have more upside than Cano. But I also have the least concerns about Cano.
See, and Aegis Teeth probably has the most concerns about Cano.
It is fair to mention I had Cano pegged as a bust candidate going into last year.
And he had not shown anything like the power that he showed last year. Really, ever.
He had some pretty...
He had a 33 homer year, but this is only his second year over 30 home runs. I would expect he's not going to hit 30 home runs next year.
He had some pretty legit excuses, I think, for poor production. He had a sports hernia, right?
Mm-hmm.
And his uncle or grandfather died. Family member that was very close to him died. And I think, you know... I think we wrote. He was obviously written off too early. He's a great player. He's just a great player and a great hitter.
Cano?
Yeah.
No, he's a great player. Yeah. But Matt Carpenter's a great player. Brian Dozier's a great player.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
I think that's a tier right there at second base. And I mean,
it's gone now. Oh no. It's
yeah.
Gone.
I just I do wonder, like, is Cano more of a 25 to 20 homer guy rather than a 39 homer guy, which
yes,
he was last year?
I think. I expected him to be.
Yeah, and that seems to me to be where the difference lies, is that I would expect him to be a lot closer to Matt Carpenter, to what Matt Carpenter was last year, and I think Matt Carpenter is a little safer as well.
All right, guys, so we're in the fourth round now, and we'll see if the pitchers start coming off the board, because David Price and John Lester were taken by Phil with the last pick of round three and the first pick of round four. Then Robinson Cano, Chris took A.J. Pollock, Scott took Justin Verlander, and the other pitcher that was in my queue, Noah Syndergaard, just was taken. Oh, I have one more pitcher in my queue who will probably be taken right now by Heath. So we have Lester, Cano, Pollock, Verlander, and Syndergaard. Why the starting pitcher run right now, Scott?
I think it's just a little delayed, and I think maybe that's the impact of having 10 teams instead of 12 teams. Some big name infielders fell further than they should. So the people who would have normally taken starting pitchers wanted to capitalize on that.
I hate Heath.
And it's still happening because Brian Dozier, here we are, end of round four. Brian Dozier nearly set a record for home run record for second baseman next year, is still available.
Yeah. Well, all the aces are gone. This sucks.
I had every intention of taking Brian Dozier. Until Adam said there's one ace left, and I looked and saw Arrieta was still there.
Oh, like, really?
If Adam hadn't said that, I would have just taken Dozier and not even looked.
All right, so he took Arrieta, then Buster Posey was taken, then Kyle Schwarber was taken. So I am up with Encarnacion, Correa, and Betts. I'm going to look at outfield here because outfield stinks. And we have Nelson Cruz, Bautista, McCutcheon, Ryan Braun. Dozier would not be.
Yeah, I don't know how much outfield stinks. It's just it's a lot of older guys.
There's going to be like 35 or 40 of them taken. Like, I might take the last three in a 10-team draft with three outfielders.
Yeah.
I don't know if it can stink.
You know, here's my problem. Like, I want to take Dozier, right? But I've been saying middle infield is fairly deep these days.
Right.
So why am I going to fill my infield... My entire infield with three of my first four picks, and including second base and shortstop. Not my entire infield. I don't have a third baseman.
Well, I don't mean to make this like a shallower league strategy session, but the shallower a league gets, the more elite you need to be everywhere. I don't know that any position is all that thin in a 10-team league with no middle infield spot, no corner infield spot, but you just want much better players at each of those positions to stand out from your competition.
Dozier it is, but... You know, like, who's a better player, straight up, Dozier or Braun?
Well, I'd rather draft Dozier first. I think Braun's a more well-rounded player, and I think he has a clearer track record of greatness. So probably, you know, in just like a general baseball sense, I would say Braun's a better player.
Yeah. Okay. So now, who was picked after Dozier? I took Dozier.
Gregory Polanco and Alex Bregman at the turn of the 4-5 round to Joel Nichols.
That is early/risky.
That is,
yes.
That is our Twitter follower participating in a draft. Now, that's definitely those look to me like I really like these players, and I'm picking at the end, so I want to make sure I get them, not knowing what's going to happen 20 picks from now.
Polanco is so interesting in this format in particular, because what he did in the first half of last season before he kind of fell back to earth could be extremely valuable in this league. He was walking a bunch. His strikeout rate was down. And it just, you know, there's a chance. He went ahead of Christian Yelich in this draft that we did with the 12 team as well. And I wonder, there's a little bit of a mystery box versus a boat situation there. Like, we're hoping Gregory Polanco kind of turns into what Christian Yelich already is, right? Like, he has more power, but not as good of a base stealer or a batting average player.
Where were they weren't points. So different just in terms of last year's production. Christian Yelich was 3.07, Gregory Polanco 2.99, so less than 1/10 of a point per game difference between the two. Polanco's a little more of a base stealer at this stage of his career. Yelich has proven to be a safer source of batting average. But I do think there are some similarities there. I rank them side by side. I wouldn't take either as early as round 4 or even round 5.
That's kind of my
point.
There's probably
a dozen outfielders I have ranked ahead of both of them.
That's kind of my point, is that if you're taking Polanco this early, when you could probably have Yelich 3 rounds later, you might have been able to have Polanco 3 rounds later, too.
Well, and when Ryan Braun's still on the clock.
Sure.
I mean,
or J.D. Martinez, Nelson Cruz.
Right.
There's a lot of good outfielders out there.
Yeah.
So,
Cespedes.
So we're in round 5 now, this 10-team points league, and you're listening to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports. And the round 5 picks so far, let me get those up here, are Alex Bregman, I took Yu Darvish, Andrew McCutchen, Carlos Gonzalez, and Heath took Ryan Braun. I'm just, every player, Heath's just going to steal my players now.
That's insane value for Braun, even in a 10-team league, mid-round 5.
45th overall. The next pick is Carlos Carrasco, but what was really hard here for me was Darvish. I took him over Cueto. The pitcher pick before that was Arrieta, before that was Syndergaard, before that was Verlander, and I was really hoping to get one of those three, and quite frankly, I was really hoping to get Verlander or Syndergaard. So now that we're doing this, and you know me, I never like my teams, maybe I should have taken a pitcher instead of Encarnacion in round 3. I could have had like Kluber or something. I don't know, man. How many aces do you guys feel like, safe aces?
I think there's still one on the board. I'm amazed he hasn't gone yet. I was surprised when you said there are no aces left after Verlander and Syndergaard and Arrieta went. I think particularly in a format that doesn't reward strikeouts so highly, Johnny Cueto is absolutely an ace.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what I said. It was between Cueto and Darvish for me.
That is what I want. Like, we did this last year.
And you took him, Scott.
We underrated him.
And
there was at least a reason to last year. He was really bad with the Royals.
I was making the same sorts of arguments with him that I was making for Matt Carpenter.
But he's but he's always been underrated in fantasy, right?
Yep.
Like, Johnny Cueto probably goes like 20 to 30 spots after he should in like 90% of drafts. And I think this is one instance where he probably got drafted probably a little too late. Even, but 47 is still in the range.
There's no way I'd take Carrasco over him. I wouldn't take Carrasco, who went one spot ahead of him in this draft. I wouldn't do that even in a roto league where strikeouts are more valuable.
Right. Yeah, now I thought the second half was bad for Cueto. I guess I had forgotten how he really turned it around and finished incredibly strong in September. He had a 3.26 ERA in the second half, but in September, Cueto was lights out. He was 4-0 with a 1.78 ERA and a strikeout per inning. So that's my bad, honestly. That's a lack of research where I just, in my mind, I thought he really had a worrisome second half, but no, he turned it around quite well. Steven Strasburg is the next pick. Jacob DeGrom is the next pick. So after Heath took Braun, it was Carrasco, Cueto, Strasburg, and DeGrom, and now we are at the final, and the Strasburg pick was Chris's, and then Cespedes goes 50th.
I had Cueto at the top of my queue, and I feel like I watched Scott in slow motion talk himself into Johnny Cueto, and it was really just upsetting on a personal level.
All right, now we get to some interesting picks in round six. 51st overall is Lucroy. Now 52nd overall is Gene Segura. Too early?
Yeah. Not based on the mock drafts we'd done previously. He was going...
But those were before he was traded to Seattle.
Yeah, right. But I still think this is basically a half-round downgrade from where he was going before. And yes, I'm factoring in the fact that it's two teams fewer. And I think that's appropriate. He's the next second baseman and shortstop, and I don't think it's particularly close at either position.
Okay.
Story's gone.
Story is not gone. Do you like Story more?
I like Story more.
Even with the half point strikeout penalty in this format?
Because one thing Segura doesn't. Right.
Even when he was bad, he didn't strike out much.
That's true, but I don't see the same upside that Segura had last year, and there's limitless upside with Story.
All right, you guys ready for a bit of a reach?
Oh, yeah.
Ready for it?
No, I was in my queue, Gary Sanchez.
That's who I was going to take.
Okay, good.
There is such an obvious pick to be made right now, and I will make some type of crazy sound when he gets picked, hopefully by me, but now Scott is up.
An obvious pick, huh?
Well, let's see Scott's team right now as we're in round six. Scott has Miguel Cabrera, Daniel Murphy, Nolan Arenado, Johnny Cueto, and Justin Verlander.
Yeah.
Obvious pick.
I'm going to go for another hitter here. I always like seeing the Yoenis Cespedes, Carlos Gonzalez, Andrew McCutchen types go off the board because it narrows the focus for me. It tells me I'm doing the right thing waiting at outfields because there are still too many alike players there left.
Here it is.
Nelson Cruz, I think, is better than all of the names they just
made. Incorrect. Close.
Close. Close, huh?
I'm trying to figure out who...
I'm not going to make the obvious pick because I'm going to take someone that... This might be the reach.
Well, you're on deck. The obvious pick to me... I'll kill
Heath. Salvador Perez will be there in three rounds.
What's that?
Salvador Perez is going to be there in three
rounds. Yeah. There's no Salvador Perez yet.
Can I guess who the pick is?
Yeah.
Not until after my pick.
Okay. After his pick. Okay. So Heath is on deck, and Heath right now has no catcher, first baseman, or second baseman. He has Arrieta and Sale, Josh Donaldson, Corey Seager, and Ryan Braun. So what are you thinking here, Heath?
Well, I don't. You mentioned not having a first baseman. And that's a problem. And I'm probably going to take someone that's not currently a first baseman, but will be in April.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Ian Desmond? So that's,
you're talking about Ian Desmond.
Yep.
Yeah. I think
it's
to be coy.
Ian Desmond time.
Okay.
Wow.
Because without first base eligibility, this is about, I think there's one outfielder left that I have ranked above Ian Desmond.
I have five ranked ahead of Ian Desmond, but only three that, you know, it makes a big difference.
There is, I think, going to be a fascinating debate about Ian Desmond in Coors Field. We're talking about someone who hit a fly ball a quarter of the percent of the time last season, only has a 30% hard hit rate.
Right.
So he's someone that you can certainly look at and say that the 22 homers he hit last year were probably a little fluky.
I don't.
On the other hand,
he's going to hit home runs. He's going to hit
That's the thing.
A ton of doubles and triples.
On the other hand, he's got a 53% ground ball rate, a 20.6% line drive rate, and I think the thing that people don't quite understand about Coors Field, you know, even after 23 years there, is it's not just about the home runs.
I'm going to make the pick, baby. All right. After Heath took Ian Desmond, Will Myers, Jose Abreu, and like, give this guy some freaking credit. JD Martinez is on my team.
That's
he went 33rd in the last head-to-head mock draft we did.
59th here. 59th.
No, that's who I was going to guess when I asked if I could guess, because it was between him and Nelson Cruz for me. Mm-hmm. I just feel like Cruz is the one coming off three straight 40 homer seasons, and it's hard for me to talk myself out of that at this point.
Wow. How many pitchers have been selected? I feel like the pitchers are terrible. We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. 15 pitchers off the board, and I'm about to make a pick. I'm about to get another pitcher, and I just feel like there's nobody I like. I'm thinking Cole Hamels right now. Chris Archer is available.
Cole Hamels.
What's wrong with Cole Hamels?
Cole Hamels.
He's so inconsistent year to year.
I think there's pitchers that have been taken that should not be taken before Cole Hamels already. So
yeah, I'm not sure I agree that he's inconsistent.
I think of him as a model of consistency, actually. Now, there's some...
He had, well, 3.32
ERA. Sometimes the home run rate will bounce around, the walk rate will bounce around, but just in terms of him being a trustworthy fantasy pitcher, he's always that.
Yeah, 200 innings. Yeah, I think really where the inconsistency label might come from is... 2013, he had a 3.60 ERA. 2014, he had a 2.46 ERA. 2015, he had a 3.65 ERA.
That's inconsistent.
It's wins.
Well, no, it's
ERA.
The 2.46 is the outlier. I don't know if that's inconsistency as much as he had one outlier season.
I thought there was more than that. I thought there were two or three.
He's been a mid-3s ERA pitcher in 200 innings with healthy strikeout rates for about the last 4 years. With the exception of 2014, where he was on a different level.
Well, it depends. Like, because a 3.32 ERA that he had last year. Wait a second. The guy has had a 3.60 ERA in two of his last four seasons.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, is he's not inconsistent.
That's inconsistent.
He's a mid-3s ERA guy.
He wasn't before that. Before that, he was a sub-3 ERA guy. Well, 3-ish ERA guy.
I mean, we were talking about Cole Hamels as a Cy Young candidate for most of last year. Like there wasn't really anything wrong with his 2016. I mean, you could just isolate the ERA and say, I don't like that, but it doesn't change the fact that he's consistently a top 15 to 20 pitcher in fantasy.
Look, I'll take a 3.32 for my number two pitcher on a good lineup, but a 3.65, I'm going to be disappointed. Especially when he's not a great whip.
Yeah.
Fortunately, the ratios don't even matter in this format.
I would just say that the difference between a 3.30 ERA and a 3.60 ERA is 90% random.
I don't know. How can you say that? 30 points on your ERA?
Think about what that means. That's an extra run every 27 innings, right? Is the math on that correct? Can someone check it?
I don't know. No.
I think it's
an extra run every 27 innings.
Yes,
so that sounds pretty random.
Yeah, I think it's pretty random. I don't know that I can put a percentage on it, like 90%. I just don't even know why we're that concerned with his ERA. Like
because
that's just in when I'm prioritizing stats that matter to me from a pitcher, that's pretty low on the list.
And I think Cole Hamels' last four seasons are a good example why. He's been pretty close to the same pitcher in terms of strikeout rate, walk rate,
and
home run rate.
And fantasy production.
And he got drafted last year.
What matters more
one
than
year
anything.
He happened to have a 2.46 ERA.
Yeah.
2.65 ERA. Not 2.46. 2.63. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm thinking 3.65.
Don't well actually me.
He had a 2.46 to 3.65 from 2014.
Don't well actually the numbers guy about numbers? Come on.
Sorry, I
get numbers wrong.
I misremembered.
You just say the wrong thing.
All right, so let's recap. Because actually the pick after I took JD Martinez, best pick of the draft, was probably the most interesting pick of the draft to this point. and it was Zach Britton with the last pick of round 6. And that was from our Twitter follower and listener, Joel. After he took Britton, he took a little help here, you guys. Who's after Britton?
Starling Marte, which was another outstanding pick.
Yeah, Starling Marte was a good pick.
Well, what do you think about Britton? Because, you know, again, you're looking for elite here. So what do you think?
I think Britton's in the discussion for the number one closer at the end of this year. He's one of the top five guys that you could make an argument for. Jansen's one of those guys. Chapman's one of those guys. I think Wade Davis is one of those guys.
Of course you do.
I'm kind of torn.
You're torn as to who it should be?
As to who to take.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay, Chris, let's go over your team here. Chris has Gary Sanchez, Goldschmidt, Carpenter, Charlie Blackmon, A.J. Pollock, and Steven Strasburg. He's about to make his 7th pick.
And smart person would take another pitcher, but I've never been confused for a smart person.
I think the best starting pitcher left, I just took Chris Archer. I think it's Rick Porcello, who I know you're particularly low on.
Yes. I was not looking. I do have Rick Porcello in my queue, but I was not looking at him in particular. What I was looking at, I was stuck between or torn between two
Dannys?
Two shortstops.
Oh, I thought you meant two Dannys.
No. I went with Trevor Story. The other option would have been Jonathan Villar. And it just, Villar feels a little more fluky to me.
What about Aledmys Diaz?
I don't have
any grip at all on whether he's real or not.
A little bit of that. Yeah. A little bit of I like that Villar and Story both stand out somewhere. That makes them feel a little more, it makes it feel like I have a little more of a base to build on with them.
I just want, like, I agree with that in one way, but in another, I think those ways that they stand out might be more due for to come back to normal. Whereas Aledmys Diaz is just doing a lot of things really well. So if one of those things falls off, he's still doing several other things really well.
That's fair. Aledmys, we have, how many plate appearances did he end up getting?
460.
That's not very much.
No.
For a guy that we did not really know about. Like, just not even, like, didn't think he was good. Like, nobody knew who Aledmys Diaz was before last spring training.
He got more plate appearances than Trevor Story, though.
Sure, but I think Trevor
also
Story
also not very highly regarded.
Yes, but I think
more than Diaz.
So what is more important, Coors Field or Cardinals Devil Magic?
well, it's not just Coors Field for me. I think when you look at Trevor Story's minor league numbers mostly just continued in the majors. Not in terms, like, he was the same general player. It's not like Aledmys Diaz got way better when he got to the majors, whereas Trevor Story was just kind of the same version of Trevor Story he'd always been. You know, a lot of strikeouts, a lot of power.
Coors Field is a nice safety net.
Yes.
I think when it comes to Trevor Story, and that's really the only reason I think I'm willing to trust in him at all at this format, as much as he strikes out. I am curious, because it was between him and VR for you.
Yes.
If this was Roto, and you were, you know, obviously had the steals that VR provides, would you lean VR in that format?
Can I just totally cop out?
Sure.
It would depend what the rest of my team looked like.
Okay, well, that's fair. Fair enough.
Does he need home runs or does he need steals?
that's the kind of hard-hitting analysis you hope for.
Now's the time in your draft, if you're in a 10-team league, to look at the roster grid and to see who needs what. For example, I do need a third baseman. Kyle Seager just went off the board. But there's still some good ones left. 5 owners, though, need... Wow, how about that? You got the third baseman going. Arenado, Donaldson, Machado, and Bryant in the first 11 picks. Then you had Bregman at some point, and then Seager. It was a really long wait before we got another third baseman off the board. But and I'm missing one of them because he's probably marked in a different... Oh, Machado. Machado's a shortstop. So the point is, you look at the roster grid, you see who needs what, you find the position that you need, and you queue up how many players you're comfortable with, and that should give you an idea of how long you can wait. Because we got Frazier, we got Beltre, Longoria, Rendon, Justin Turner, and I might be fine with all 5 of them. So why take a third baseman if that's the case? It's kind of how I'm going to approach that. Now, round seven, let's take a look at round seven. And it was Starling Marte, Cole Hamels to me, Kenley Jansen, Kyle Hendricks, Zach Greinke to Heath, Aroldis Chapman, Chris Archer, Trevor Story to Chris, Danny Duffy, who's RP eligible, and Carlos Martinez. So we have four relievers, including Duffy. We have Duffy, Chapman, Jansen, and then you want to go back to the last pick of round six, Zach Britton, coming off the board here in this round.
Now, I know there was some debate over which reliever should go first, and I don't know, Jansen, Chapman, Britton, it doesn't make a big difference to me, but the only one that I would have considered drafting in round seven of a head-to-head points league is Danny Duffy.
Okay.
Because I just don't think I don't think distribution of say what's going to have the biggest impact on how valuable you perceive your closer to be in a head-to-head points league is distribution of saves over the course of a season. Not even total number of saves, but how regular the saves are. And that is, there couldn't be anything less predictable than that.
Does it bother you, though, that like Kenley Jansen blew away Danny Duffy last year in fantasy points? And so did Britton, and so did Familia.
I the one thing I do look at is saves tend to be extremely volatile on a year-to-year basis. We'll see elite closers not get that many save opportunities, relatively speaking. We'll see kind of mediocre guys have really big numbers, and it just... There's so much. That's one thing that, like, it's hard for me to chase saves in when I'm looking at the season long, because it just, the difference between 32 saves and 40 over the course of a year is huge for their fantasy production.
Yeah.
But
you feel it a lot more in Roto. Not to interrupt you.
But it's one save every 20 games.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I was getting at, because head-to-head play is like a series of small seasons, basically.
Yeah,
26 of them. Like, you're not going to notice. I don't think you're going to notice the difference between a 40 save guy and a 35 save guy, whatever. Like you were saying, Chris.
It's just a lot of it's just going to be random.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about round eight, guys.
Great pick, Adam.
Thank you. Round eight, and I'll pull up the results. Jose Bautista, Kyle Seager, Rick Porcello, Jonathan Villar to Scott. Porcello went to Chris. Then Villar to Scott. DJ LeMahieu, he took Danny Salazar. Senwan Oh to George. Felix Hernandez, and then I took Garrett Cole and got a great pick. How about Jose Bautista, 71st overall, guys?
I was a little... disappointed that somebody took him, so I couldn't. Now, obviously, there's a lot of risk there coming off the season he just had, but even understanding that the numbers he put up this season were not what we're used to seeing from Jose Bautista, he was still as good in this format with all those walks. He was as good on a per-game basis as Yoenis Cespedes. So, beginning of round eight,
and
that's great value.
Lance Brozdowski is just sniping me pick after pick after pick.
And Bautista, another guy, kind of moved in the wrong direction last season, but doesn't strike out all that much for both a low batting average guy and a high power guy.
He's also really old. Yes. DJ LeMahieu from Lance, I thought was a good... Like, when Scott said Segura is the best second baseman and shortstop available, and I argued shortstop, but I would rather have LeMahieu than Segura. And he went 2.5 rounds later?
Yes. Now, it wasn't particularly close what they did last year. Obviously, a career season from Segura. DJ LeMahieu is a little more within his normal range. So it's kind of another security versus upside argument. I just think we've kind of crossed the point in the draft now, round 7, 8, 9. Like, I am willing to gamble a little more for upside at this point, which I think Segura has.
Speaking of which, Miguel Sano just went off the board, and that's one that I cannot figure out if I think... Like, I think it's probably too early in a draft capital sense, in that you might have been able to get him next time around, although Joel Nichols is drafting at the end, so you do kind of have to reach if you want a guy. Miguel Sano is someone that I feel very little confidence in him being the 80th best player in fantasy baseball. Like, I think he could either be 20th or 150th.
I don't really see any way he could be 20th in points.
Because of the strikeout rate.
The strikeouts aren't going away.
Sure, but you can see a way that that Giancarlo Stanton.
You're basically asking him to be Giancarlo Stanton.
Right. You can see Giancarlo Stanton being a top 20 player.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it would basically just be Miguel Sano would have to maintain a high BABIP, cut his strikeout rate to the 28 to 30% range.
By 20% off his career.
Sure. But he's...
It's no small order.
Yes. But he's only 23. He had relatively little exposure to the high minors. Missed the entire 2014 season. So I look at him as someone who could absolutely improve.
He's a breakout candidate.
Dramatically and kind of do so in ways that we haven't seen from him yet. I think he's someone who could improve his skill set across the board, kind of like Bryce Harper did 2 years ago.
So after Sano was taken with the last pick of round 8, the first pick of round 9 was Marcus Stroman. And then after I gave my little spiel about how there are so many third basemen I like, why I take one, I decided to take Adrian Beltre. I just can't ignore what he did last year. And he's so good and consistent. Addison Russell went after that. And, okay, a little upside there. And I also have 6 starting pitchers.
That's too many.
In my queue. Okay. Now I have 5 starting pitchers in my queue as Julio Teheran. The ones I have in my queue, it's a mock draft, so whatever. Keuchel, Tanaka, Fulmer, Quintana, Aaron Sanchez. I also had Teheran in there. And I figured I have to wait 18 picks. I'm hoping that one of those 6, now one of those 5, will be there for me next time I pick. And I kind of feel like they will. So I decided to take a slugger in Adrian Beltre. And we've got Russell after... So Stroman, Beltre, Addison Russell, Julio Teheran, first 4 picks of round 9. Heath, you are on the clock.
Yes.
Heath's team, Donaldson, Seager, Corey Seager, Ian Desmond, Ryan Braun, Arrieta, Sale, Salazar, and Greinke. 4 pitchers. You have more pitchers than anybody else. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Starters.
More starters, yes. Yeah. And I'm going to draft another outfielder because I plan on moving in Desmond to first base eventually. And I think this is probably an outfielder that's going to be on most of my teams with the way that the drafts have gone so far. It's Adam Jones. He just keeps falling to me, so I'll keep taking him.
Cool.
I don't love this format for him because, you know, he walks 20 times a year.
Right.
It's actually the same reason why I don't think Rougned Odor's been drafted. Yeah, uh-huh. He had 33 home run second baseman last year, and he still hasn't been drafted. It just puts a real limit on the upside.
Maybe it puts a limit on the upside, but I actually feel like Adam Jones is a head-to-head points kind of guy because he's an accumulator.
Right.
Like, right, he's not particularly great at any one thing.
But he's really bad at one thing, is what I'm saying.
Sure. And he got a little better last year.
To put it in perspective, he averaged 2.83 points per game last year. Stephen Piscotty, who I don't think anyone's dreamed of drafting yet, is 2.89. He was better.
Sure, but Stephen Piscotty hasn't averaged 153 games per year for the last 8.
And actually, Stephen Piscotty is my next available outfielder.
Okay.
Scott White, on the clock. You have, hold on, let me get Scotty White's team here. Well, you have 50 seconds to make your pick, and this is taking me way too long. Okay, Scott White has 3 pitchers, Cueto, Verlander, and Archer, Miguel Cabrera, Daniel Murphy, Nolan Arenado, Jonathan Villar, and Nelson Cruz. So this is round 9. 1 outfielder, no catcher, no relievers. What are you thinking?
I think I'm going to go with another starting pitcher because we're nearing the point where the ones who have at least shown at some point in the past they can be aces. They're almost all gone now. I'm talking specifically Matt Harvey, Masahiro Tanaka, and the one I'm actually taking, Dallas Keuchel.
Okay. Now I got 4 left in the queue.
So Scott now has 4 pitchers like me, right?
I have four pitchers, yes.
And this is a very, I think, Heath Cummings rotation and Scott White rotation between the two of them. Because I've got Sale, Arrieta, Greinke, and Salazar. And you've got...
I have Verlander, Johnny Cueto, Chris Archer, and Dallas Keuchel. The only one I don't... The only one I wouldn't want from your rotation is Salazar, and we've had that... We've had that argument a couple times already.
Even as a number four starter.
I mean, in kind of a nebulous way, just calling him a number four starter doesn't strike me as odd.
Like you would prefer to have Keuchel than Salazar?
Yes, I would much rather have Keuchel than Salazar.
That's okay.
You know he likes the innings.
He does like the innings.
Loves the innings.
I have three pitchers in my queue who are very not safe and one who's safe and boring.
Go for the upside towers.
You're going Quintana, safe and boring.
No.
Yeah, that's the safe and boring guy.
Harvey the upside
I've
guy?
I've got Porcello and Strasburg already, so I kind of could use some safe and boring. I'm going with it.
I don't know. Quintana. Rick Porcello's pretty boring.
Give me my 200 innings and low 3 ZRA and just hope he wins 15 games.
I mean, Porcello and
Which
Quintana.
Means hope he gets traded.
Porcello and Quintana aren't that dissimilar, are they?
No. Well,
except for perception.
I feel like Porcello did what Quintana's done for the last 3 years. He just won 22 games while he did it.
Yes. I also think Porcello is actually a lot riskier than Quintana. If Quintana played for Boston, I'd be much more excited about drafting Quintana than I would am Porcello.
I still think Quintana's probably more likely to have a better year than Porcello. I've got him ranked ahead of Porcello.
Okay.
Tanaka
was taken right after.
Yeah, and that's one that kind of mixes kind of boring production and risk.
Now, I kind of want to examine what Heath just said here. He ranks Quintana ahead of Porcello. Chris drafted both Porcello and Quintana, and he got Porcello, what, two rounds in front of Quintana?
Yeah, I believe so.
So if Chris had ranked Quintana ahead of Porcello, he would have not ended up with both, I think is fair to say.
Yeah, I think the main difference is I think Quintana is going to be on an awful team, and I think Porcello is going to be on a very good team.
He will win more games than Quintana next year.
And I think they're probably pretty similar pitchers otherwise.
See,
like I know Porcello doesn't have the track record.
Right.
He does have the low 3 ZRA in two of the last three seasons. For me, if I think they're both likely to put up something around a 3-4 ERA, I will take the guy who's probably going to win 5 to 6 more games. Even though wins are random.
I think he's going to win more games. Probably.
And I think rate stats are a lot less important in this format.
They are. If he goes back to being a 170 inning pitcher,
yes,
then he's probably not going to have quite as much luck winning more games.
Yes.
Because he won't be working as deep into games. Quintana's more likely to throw 200 innings than Porcello is.
And I'm going to go with the high upside guy now.
Which is?
Matt Harvey.
Matt Harvey. I ended up getting both.
Okay. Well, that means Aaron Sanchez is still in my queue. He's the last one of the guys I was hoping to get.
He was the last one in my queue as well.
Who, Aaron Sanchez or Matt Harvey?
Aaron Sanchez.
Yeah, so there's five picks in between me and, like, there's no way Scott and Heath are taking a fifth starting pitcher here, right?
I would have thought about it if it was Harvey, just because if that did work out, Harvey is my fifth and Keuchel is my fourth and they both bounce back. That would have been insane. But Chris relieved me of that predicament. I think I'm going to fill my utility spot now, which always makes me a little nervous when I have other offensive spots to fill.
See, well, hold on. Why not take, because there's another guy in my queue, whatever, mock draft. Why not take Melanson here? He's got a great opportunity for a ton of saves. I know you love to wait until the end, but these closers that get a lot of saves on winning teams can really make a big difference. So why not take Melanson? Or your next RP, Kelvin
Herrera. I
don't
feel like they do make a big difference.
Well, they definitely do make a big difference.
They make a big difference.
No, I don't think they do. I think the difference would be impossible to notice because it would be mostly impacted by save distribution. And I don't feel like, you know, I Mark Melanson's there. Kelvin Herrera's 13th. I don't think there's really that big of a difference between Mark Melanson and Kelvin Herrera in terms of what I actually expect them to contribute in fantasy.
There might be a 15 save opportunity. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Though.
There might be, or Herrera might get more save opportunities than Melanson.
What we need to do.
You took Odor, by the way.
I know. I think you could make the argument that I can't predict which saver is going to make the difference. Which saver? Saver. I'm going to call him savers for the rest of the
I think
season.
That's the way to do it.
Yes. Which saver is going to make the biggest difference. But I don't think you can make the argument that having a great saver doesn't make a big, great difference.
It's kind of like the running back versus wide receiver debate in fantasy football, right? Like, having the best running back is obviously great to do. Being able to predict who that guy is going to be is much more difficult than it is predicting who the number one wide receiver is going to be.
I honestly just don't agree. I actually feel like the fantasy football analogy is kickers. I mean, kickers, their fantasy output is significant. They can score, yeah. They can be a tenth of your team's points in a given week.
Yes.
But going into the season, it's just a guessing game who's going to be the highest scorer of them. And from week to week, it's just as much of a
And that is
game.
That is true. When you're looking at every other stat, basically you're looking at a few hundred opportunities,
right?
And saves, you're looking at 35 to 50 for someone who keeps their job for the whole season.
Probably 60 for Wade Davis this year.
Okay.
Heath just took Wade Davis, I think, is not that it's a surprise to anyone.
Yeah, if you heard me yell, damn it, it was because Aaron Sanchez got taken, removing every pitcher from my queue. After that, it was Wade Davis to Heath, Evan Longoria to George, and Salvador Perez to Brent, and that makes
You heard
me...
Heath yell, damn it.
Well, while you're picking Adam...
No, I know what I'm doing here. But... Okay. All right, go ahead, you can talk.
Well, Rougned Odor was who I ended up taking right before Aaron Sanchez when I talked about filling my utility spot, and with a second baseman, no less. I think, you know, this not being his best format since he hardly walks at all has, I mean, middle of round 10, doesn't that seem like a bit awesome. Of an overcompensation?
Yeah, tremendous. But there's another second baseman that is kind of the mirror image of him.
Ian Kinsler?
No.
Dustin Pedroia?
No.
Those guys were both better
Jason
than
Ben Zobrist.
No.
Well, hold on. Let me I'm on the clock with 30 seconds left. I found two more pitchers that I like, and I will let you guys decide for me. Steven Matz or Rich Hill? And I'm leaning towards Hill in a 10-team
Steven
league.
Steven Matz every time.
No, I'm leaning towards Hill in a 10-team league because I think Hill's really awesome, and if he gets hurt, I can more easily replace him.
Steven Matz is really awesome, too.
All right, you say Matz. Heath?
Oh, I say Matz.
I do rank Mets ahead, but I understand your logic there with the 10-team league, and I might actually go Hill for that reason, too.
Yeah,
well, you took
sure
too damn
better.
Long, Scott, so now I had to take Steven stinking Mets.
I'm not sure Rich Hill's better even on a per-inning basis.
Oh, well.
He was last year.
He was last year. Steven Matz pitched through bone spurs in his elbow. Maybe that'll be an issue for him moving forward, but I think Steven Matz is someone who has legitimate ace upside. Maybe I'm alone in thinking that.
No.
In this group, but I think he has as much upside as anyone in the Mets rotation not named Noah Syndergaard.
Is Rich Hill old enough to be Steven Matz's dad?
He would have had to have a really young kid.
Okay.
I don't think what you're saying that in terms of the upside is like, I don't know that I really even disagree with it, but
then
Hill
don't.
Has already shown like he was an ace last year when he was able to pitch. Like he's already accomplished more than Matz has.
Okay, but we've given Rich Hill 18 years to show it once, and Steven Matz has had 2 years. Like, I don't think because he showed it once in 18 years that makes him more likely to do it this year than Matz, who's only had a couple years to show it.
I have a question about me, because now we're into round 11. And after I took Matz, Joel took Chris Davis with a C and Sonny Gray. Is now a good time for Evan Gattis? Or does the Beltran signing crush his value? Yes or no?
I'm going to say yes to both.
Because, gosh, you could really, if you get an elite catcher here in round 11, you could have a huge advantage.
I do think Gattis, the signing of Beltran clearly cuts into Gattis's playing time, that, you know, and the fact that they traded for Brian McCann, he has no position to call his own. I still think he's going to get 400 plus at bats though, and I still think that makes him clearly the fourth best catcher in fantasy.
Where does he get the at bats?
And, well, Beltran will play outfield some days, Gattis will play catcher some days, and McCann will just take a day off or move to DH himself.
All right, you sold me. Gattis it is.
Joel, great pick with Chris Davis.
By the way, Brent just took the Rugnetador analog for me.
D. Gordon?
Yes. Like, doesn't walk much, but also doesn't strike out at all, which is a huge plus in this format.
And his steals are Odor's homers.
Yes.
Except home runs are worth a lot more than stolen base.
But he's also going to hit for a much higher average.
And he's going to steal more bases than Odor has homers, I would guess.
Yeah, okay. I mean, if you were just comparing Odor's homers to Gordon's steals, Odor clearly wins out.
Well, it becomes an argument of which do you buy more, Odor's 2016 or D. Gordon's 2015, because they were pretty similar in terms of fantasy point output.
Odor was the number, 10 second baseman last year?
Yeah, but you can't judge it that way because that was in a deeper second base pool in a different environment. I'm just talking about where their points. It was similar. The just raw number of fantasy points was similar. Mm-hmm. D. Gordon in 2015.
Well, listen.
Gordon in 2016.
The important thing is that Heath has 20 seconds to take a former or current Royal. So what's it going to be, Heath?
I am not going to take. I think I'm going to take
Raul Mondesi Jr.
Second
is
baseman
still
that I had ranked highest when Scott took Rougned Odor. And it's
Mike Montgomery.
Kind of the boring pick, but Chesler Cuthbert's going to play second every day. And no. And I don't know for sure that Chesler Cuthbert's going to play second every day, but I took Ian Kinsler.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
safety and security.
Can't argue with that.
I think there's probably 3 years in a row I've called Kinsler a bust, maybe 2 years in a row.
We're doing it again?
No, it's kind of like you with Nelson Cruz, actually. Like I've decided he's supposed to be dropping off now, so I'm going to keep saying it until it actually happens.
Well, you know, I did that with Pau Gasol in basketball, and it's finally worked out. 3 years. Yeah. 3 years on. I will say, Ian Kinsler, there are some pretty major red flags. His home run to fly ball ratio was 2.5 times higher than it had been the year before.
But 2015 Ian Kinsler is better than Rougned Odor, right? In a points league?
I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know.
No, he was.
Is 2015 Ian Kinsler better?
2015 Ian Kinsler? I don't remember how it was 2015.
I will tell you.
I think it was pretty close.
Ian Kinsler had 521.5 fantasy points in 2015. Oh, no, that was 16. Sorry. All right, so let's start with Odor. Odor had 457.5 fantasy points in 2016, and Kinsler had 454. So what did I say for Odor?
Yeah, I don't know. But they were close.
Run it back,
they were within like 3 points.
Yeah.
How about that?
So
by the way, there
all
is
the way back
an unbelievably...
Well, there's...
Unbelievably obvious pick alert, by the way. Somebody absolutely needs to be drafted now.
Okay. I don't know if that's... That's who I'm going to take.
I hope it is. By the way, okay, so the next after Kinsler, Adam Eaton,
you guys
to Lance, Scott took Rich Hill. Chris, go ahead and take the most obvious player. Best pick of the draft here, 8 picks into round 11.
I have no idea who you're talking about, so I'm going to let you guys vote. Do I take Todd Frazier or Anthony Rendon?
Rendon.
I would take Frazier. I don't think either is who Adam is talking about.
Not helpful at all. Adam, Rendon, or Frazier?
I'm feeling Rendon bounce back this year, like another breakout. And that's not who I was talking about.
And if you guaranteed me that Todd Frazier was going to play the whole year in Chicago, I might take Frazier. I'm concerned. That's a really good park for him.
Yeah.
Cincinnati was an even better park for him. I'm afraid if he gets traded anywhere normal,
well,
so much of his value is home runs.
And I do wonder how much he's changed his swing to account for the fact that he's played into very homer-friendly parks.
If he went to a bigger park and he came out and said, I've changed my swing to hit more doubles, would you feel good about that?
No.
Not at all.
No, I'm just saying that he has become an extreme fly ball hitter, and he's become someone who hits a ton of home runs and also just a an absolutely absurd amount of infield fly balls.
Okay, well, we are done now with round 11, which looks like this. Started with Sonny Gray. Is that a reach, by the way?
A little bit.
Could you make an argument that the home run derby screwed up Todd Frazier in at the All-Star break in 2015 and he just never changed again? Like, that's, he just sure. stayed that person?
You certainly could make that argument.
Sonny Gray, Evan Gaddis, D. Gordon, David Dahl, Ian Kinsler, Adam Eaton, Rich Hill, Anthony Rendon, and Mark Melancon. Good pick, R.J. White, Mark Melancon. We're actually waiting for the last pick of this draft from Phil. He will make pick 110 and pick 111.
And he got auto-picked for the last pick.
That's so weak.
What a way to end it.
We're going to do one
draft.
We're going to do one more. What do you think, Scott? Should we leave? Those aren't bad picks, Justin Turner and Matt Kemp.
In fact, I'm not so sure he didn't queue them up.
Yeah, it feels like he did. But Justin, I'm cool with it. Justin Turner and Matt Kemp. We'll stick with that for now.
Did you almost sing pick, Justin Turner?
Right?
You just sang Justin Turner. Do it again.
Justin Turner.
I sang it?
Yes.
Interesting.
Great pick from RJ. What a turn by RJ White.
Mark Melancon, and then for three picks later, Wilson Contreras. As we're in the round, this is going to be our last round. So, will the best pick of the draft be made? I guarantee it will be at least by me. There's six picks before me, but I will make this pick if he's available.
It wasn't Mark Melancon?
It was not Mark Melancon. Very good pick, but not as good as the person I'm going to take. Could be a girl. I might be taking a female here. I don't want to give anything away.
So, Jenny Baker?
Who?
That's a reference to the television show Pitch.
Oh, I've never seen it.
It's a good show.
Oh, damn you, Chris Towers. Best pick of the draft.
Yeah, that's a second round caliber talent.
It was.
Michael Brantley.
Michael Brantley. We should probably say it out loud. Yeah.
12th I mean, round. You're saying at one point, like it was eons ago. It was 12 months ago. Like, I took A.J. Pollock before him. It's not like...
We were not taking Michael Brantley anywhere close to the second round last year.
No, I'm pretty sure he got hurt before.
Right.
But in 2014 and 2015, he was a second round caliber player.
He was the number one outfielder, I think, in points leagues.
In 2014, right?
Yeah. At least number three. At worst, number three. And this is a great format for Michael Brantley.
Yes. And never Scott strikes took, out.
Yeah. Scott took Jackie Bradley after.
Right, yeah, it's just a question of how early you're willing to take the chance that Brantley just is completely useless again.
12th round is
the 10th. Yeah, it was a good pick. I wasn't trying to say that. It was a second round value. It felt a little.
No, I said this is a guy who has been a second round pick in the past.
Straight up elite pick from Chris Towers.
Best pick of the draft.
All right, we got Brantley, Wilson Contreras. Kemp, Wilson Contreras, Brantley, and Jackie Bradley. And Heath will be on deck as we wait for Lance to pick. Lance on his team has Votto, LeMahieu, Chris Bryant, three outfielders, Springer, Adam Eaton, and Christian Yelich. Carlos Santana is his utility, which isn't so bad. I mean, Santana's pretty good, really good in this format. Aaron Sanchez, Noah Syndergaard, and Carlos Carrasco. This is not my favorite team, but it looks like he's got a closer that I can't see. He has a role as Chapman. That helps.
What kind of device are you working on?
The roster grid. Okay. I just didn't scroll.
I see.
Yeah.
You should scroll more, Adam.
That Lance just took the guy that Chris thinks is the number one closer, right?
I think he certainly has a chance to be.
Edwin Diaz.
I think Edwin Diaz has the ability to be one of those 13 strikeouts per nine great ratios. I mean, again... You know, in head-to-head format, I don't know how much value I put on him or any closer. I think I'm a little closer to Scott on this, but I do certainly think Edwin Diaz has number one closer potential.
It was only 31 picks ago that I said this guy was my best available outfielder, and everybody disagrees, so I'll go ahead and take him now. That's Stephen Piscotty.
There you go.
Okay. Hey, Heath, I can't believe you have Wade Davis as your number one closer.
You can't?
I think he's going to get the most save opportunities.
Absolutely blows me away. When we saw last year, the save opportunities were really not there for the Cubs.
I don't buy that.
I do buy that.
I don't buy that a team is just going to win too many of their games by 4 runs or more.
Well,
and that normalized in the second half.
Sort of. Completely.
It was a storyline for the first half of the year, and in the second half it normalized.
But you've got Kenley Jansen, who's super safe, Aroldis Chapman, who's super safe. I don't know why you would take a guy who has arm trouble. Like, it's
I don't ever have to take Wade Davis as the first closer off the board. I think Wade Davis is going to be the best closer this year. There's no reason to take him first. You have to use average draft position when you're drafting as well.
Well, why would you rank him first if you're saying there's no need to take him first?
Because I think he's going to be the best closer.
So you would take him first.
I am going to take Wade Davis first, but I will take him 4 rounds after everybody else takes the other guys. I will not take Wade Davis before any of those other closers have been taken.
What if you were...
But I will not take any of those other closers in the 7th round.
All right, well...
okay.
All right, bye.
Like, I don't...
No, I mean, that's fine.
Yeah, that's no, just... Makes that's, sense. That's... I, you know, it becomes an issue of how you're interpreting rankings. If you don't interpret them as a draft guide, you just interpret them, this is how I think things will look at the end of the year, then it'll look different than if you interpret them as a draft guide.
Well, it can be... It cannot. My rankings are not a good draft guide if all 12 teams are going to use my rankings and pick in that order, I guess. But for one guy, you look at average draft position, you say, this guy's going in the 11th round, I'll take him in the 10th.
All right, we're done with our podcast for today.
Okay.
Great job, everybody.
And great job, Adam.
Let's recap round 12. Scott, maybe you can pause the draft so I'm on the clock. Round 12, Kemp, Contreras, Brantley, Jackie Bradley, Edwin Diaz, Stephen Piscotty, Justin Upton, Craig Kimbrell, Kelvin Herrera, and Roberto Osuna. So we are getting a lot of relievers coming off the board.
I like Joel's Osuna pick there.
Yeah, he was like number 3 or 4 closer last year.
Yeah, I mean,
or saver.
Really
saver.
Good.
We were getting to the point where I would even think about taking a closer if one of these caliber were still there, but now they're flying off fast and furious.
Like hotcakes, they say.
Yes, like the hotcakes.
People love pancakes.
I made pancakes for lunch today. Banana pancakes, gluten-free, delicious stuff. I can tell you about it next time. I've already told people about
Probably the most overrated breakfast food.
Oh, come on.
I mean, waffles. Waffles and French toast are clearly better than pancakes.
False. Oh, my gosh.
Bacon and eggs, both better.
To be continued at a later date. We'll talk to you next time around. Thank you, everybody. The results of this draft will be available on the website, cbssports.com/fantasy. For Heath, Chris, and Scott, I'm Adam. See you later.